This is, our second message in Numbers. And as we go through this, as we talked last week, it's Numbers chapter 2. And as I said last week, I really felt led to not just preach through Numbers, but actually read through Numbers as well. So we will take the time to read the entire chapter of Numbers. And even though in the midst of a lot of repetition, I think that the repetition is there for us. As God has said, every word is for our edification, and we believe that. And as we do this and we go through this verse, this chapter this week, you know, we'll talk about what it means to be connected together. What does it mean to be part of the body? And why do we need to be connected? Why is being part of the body important? Is it important? This is a question that's, I think, often considered, even if it's not asked outright. Why do I need church? Yeah, I know that most of you know that I teach here at Maryville Christian School, and Carl and I, we talked about it last year. There's a lot of students here that are not part of a local body. I know many, many families here that to them they say Christian education is important, and they're adamant about being a Christian, about their walk with God, but are not part of a local expression, a local body. People that say they've been looking for a church home for 4 or 5 years. Really? You've been looking for a church? Really looking for a church for 4 or 5 years? I mean, I know it's not going to be tough, but... Or people that attend, they say, 2 or 3 different churches. Well, I like this church for their Sunday night service and the music. And I like this church. And I go to this church over here. But they're not connected to any one body. This is a real and tragic problem. I think the greatest problem is they don't see a need. They don't see a need to be a part of a local body. They don't see a need to be connected. And I think if we saw... What Moses is trying to lay out of this in this book of Numbers, of the battlefield of being in the wilderness, perhaps they would see the need more. Just a kind of quick review to kind of get us back into this book of Numbers, and I have to say that I told the guys yesterday, man, I'm just loving it more and more. It's like, God is just confirming to me this is where we're supposed to be, because this, what a great, great book of the Bible. It's just one of those books that, like I said, I would read through it and I would do the skim read. I know none of you guys have ever done that, right? It's amazing. Like, it's almost like you read 3 or 4 different verses and one, I got all that down, especially when he's repeating it over and over. And that's been my habit when I go through Numbers. But stopping and slowing it down and saying, okay, God, what are you trying to tell me in this? Has really, I'm just amazed at the truths that God has in here for us. So I look forward to this book. But as we talked last week, we said the Greek title, the title that has come up to the church is Numbers, arithmios, or because of all the census and all the counting in there. But the Hebrew title of the book was In the Wilderness. It was about what it meant to be in the wilderness. And I've come to love that title a little bit more. Wouldn't it be great if instead of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, we would have Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Wilderness? Seems kind of funny, but I would love if that was it. But this was about in the wilderness, and we said that God was leading them into the wilderness. He did not send them. As we mentioned last week, the more than 80 times we had this phrase, God spoke to Moses. And how critical that is to see this, God was with them all the way through this. He was leading them forth, that they were never in this battle alone. And of course, we see that same picture in that New Testament where Jesus says, I will never leave you or forsake you. And the first thing that God told them as they were going into the wilderness last week was, he said, the first census was about get ready for war. It's a war. It's a battle. He named everybody, every single man 20 years old. He said, get ready for war, with the exception of the Levites. Every man who could hold a spear, get ready for war. It's a battle. Being in the wilderness After you've been led out of this spiritual darkness, out of Egypt, and as you are heading toward that promised land, it's a battle. It's a fight. And this is where we all find ourselves as believers now. As we walk this world, we're in the wilderness. We're going through this. And the battle we fight is not against some enemy. We're warring against the flesh and unbelief. That this is the real enemy. And what we'll find, those who fall. And as we said last week, the book is divided into two sections. We have the first census. And all those that are in the census are all those, with the exception of two, that fail in the wilderness. And we have another census coming up later of all those who succeed in going to the promised land. And their battle was not that some enemy come and kill and destroyed all of them. They fail due to unbelief. But even though that's the real enemy, the greatest danger is from the wrath of God. And here they are in the midst, in the very midst of this battle, as God has ordered them and laid them out, protecting them from the wrath of God. He laid the Levites around them. He put the Levites around in order to protect them from that. They were encamped around the tabernacle to keep the presence of God and the wrath of God off of them. But we are to go out and fight the battle. And it's in that context of going to battle. And as David pointed out last week, that the first few chapters is all about preparing us for this battle. As we brings us to chapter 2, Numbers chapter 2. This is our preparation for the battle. How do we fight this battle that we're a part of? Numbers chapter 2 starts with, the Lord spoke to Moses. And as I mentioned, this phrase will be more than 80 times. This is our third time. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, the people of Israel shall camp each by his own standard with the banners of their father's house. They shall camp facing the tent of meeting on every side. Those to the camp on the east side toward the sunrise shall be the standard of the camp of Judah by their companies, the chief of the people of Judah being Nashon, the son of Amminadab, in his company as listed being 74,600. Those to the camp next to him shall be the tribe of Issachar, the chief of the people of Issachar being Nethaneel, the son of Zuar. His company is listed being 54,400. Then to the tribe of Zebulun, the chief of the people of Zebulun being Eliab, the son of Helon. His company is listed being 57,400. All those listed of the camp of Judah by their companies were 186,400. They shall set out first on the march. On the south side shall be the standard of the camp of Reuben by their companies, the chief priest of the people of Reuben being Eleazar, the son of Shedeur. His company is listed 56,400. And those to the camp next to him shall be the tribe of Simeon, the chief of the people of Simeon being Shemuel, the son of Zerush Hadid. His company is listed being 59,300. Then the tribe of Gad, the chief of the people of Gad, being Eliasaph, the son of Reuel. His company is listed 45,650. All those listed of the camp of Reuben by their companies were 151,450. They shall set out second. Then the tent of meeting shall set out, with the camp of the Levites in the midst of the camps. And as they camp, so shall they set out, each in his position, standard by standard. On the west side shall be the standard of the camp of Ephraim by their companies, the chief of the people of Ephraim being Elishaham, the son of Ammihub. His company, as listed, 40,500. And next to him shall be the tribe of Manasseh, the chief of the people of Manasseh being Gamaliel, the son of Bedezer. His company has listed 32,200. Then the tribe of Benjamin, the chief of the people of Benjamin being Abidan, the son of Gideoni. His company is listed being 35,400. All those listed of the camp of Ephraim by their companies were 108,100. They shall set out third of the march. On the north side shall be the standard of the camp of Dan by their companies, the chief of the people of Dan being Ahazar, the son of Amishadai. His company is listed 62,700. And those to camp next to him shall be the tribe of Asher, the chief of the people of Asher being Pegai, the son of Akron. His company as listed being 41,500. Then the tribe of Naphtali, the chief of the people of Naphtali being Ahara, the son of Enon, and his company is listed 53,400. All those listed at the camp of the Dan were 157,600. They shall set out last, standard by standard. These are the people of Israel, as listed by their fathers' houses. All those listed in the camp by their companies were 603,550. But the Levites were not listed among the people of Israel as the Lord commanded Moses. Thus did the people of Israel according to all that the Lord commanded Moses. So they commanded by their standards, and so they set out, each one in his clans according to his father's house. Thus the ending reading of Numbers chapter 2. And so so here God has said, you are going in the wilderness, you're going to battle, and the first thing that you need to do to be prepared for battle is you need to have an arrangement. You need to be arranged. In preparation of the battle, God arranges the camp. There's an order to be established so that everyone has a place. But when you think about it, first thing you notice is it's a really strange battle arrangement, isn't it? You know, if you were going to arrange them for battle, and you put the tabernacle of the tent of meetings right here in the middle, and here you have Judah and his camp this way, and the two there's three on each side. Well, you would all tell them, well, your job is to watch for the enemies to the east, wouldn't it? And your job is to watch the enemies to the north. But which way are they facing? They're facing toward the temple. Here they are, they're getting ready to go to battle, and then they're looking back this way. And you think, wait, what's going on here? What's up with this? We're all looking toward the center, toward the tabernacle. But in this, I think the interesting is, you know, as we get into this deeper, we're going to look at, yes, we're seeing the tabernacle, but that also means I'm looking at you. And you're looking at me. And the people over here, they're looking at the tabernacle and they're also watching the people over there. So God has brought us in this. And you know, God's so creative. You know, God's such a creative God. I don't know if you ever look much at nature, at biology, but you know, there are animals that can look in several directions at one time. You ever seen those lizards that have the independent eyes and they have eyes look forward and eyes look back at the same time? And you think, man, I get confused looking one direction. Could you imagine having two sets of information coming all at once? But God did it in such a way that these lizards can look forward and backwards at exactly the same time. But he didn't do that for us, did he? Does he like them more? He'd say, you know, I'm going to give them the ability to look behind them and in front of them at the same time. And they got a brain that can handle both of them. And, of course, my brain can't handle looking one direction at once. You know, too much information. He could have made us that we could watch our own backs, as many types of animals do. But God chose instead to create us with a blind spot, didn't he? You know, we have a blind spot, every one of us. You know, when you look at it, and it's really, there's more that's going on around me that I can't see that I can see. You know, if you're looking forward, you know, you can see out about this far, but everything back here, you know, there could be all this stuff going on behind me, back behind me, and I wouldn't see any of it, would I? But you'd see all of it. But guess what? You don't get to see the faces John makes at you, just so you know. You know, you don't get to see what he's doing up there, and he's like, when he's pointing at you laughing, you don't see that, but I get to see that. So we're looking at each other's blind spots. We're looking behind each other. We're seeing what's coming up behind you. And this is the way that God has made us. And you know, I think there's a reason that God made us this way. And I think this is the reason one of the reasons God organized in this way. And you know, I really think we need to be praising God for this, because it reminds us that we need each other. We need mutual support. We need people helping us. We need people that's watching behind us to helping us out. As God is arranging the camp, everyone has a place. You know, it's not just enough. God said, okay, you're going to the wilderness. It's going to be a battle, and we're going this way. All right, let's go. And everybody follow along. God said, no, we're going to the wilderness. It's going to be a battle. Now, let me arrange you in the way that will help you get through this battle. Let me put you in the order and in the place that's going to get us through this. It's not enough to just go that way. God didn't tell them, you just follow along, don't worry about it. I got it all. In the wilderness, you are to be organized for this battle. You're to be organized for this upcoming event that we're going through. And if you look at the charts of this, it's easy to see there's an order. There's a proper place. The sides are balanced. You know, and I know you can look at it, and it's really interesting when you look at the tribes. And you know, you can try to sit there and try to figure out, so why did we have these here and that there? And to be honest with you, there's not any records. It doesn't say. You know, we notice some obvious things. We notice Judah is in front. Most people believe that's because it's from the tribe of Judah that Christ come. He would be the one in front. But why Issachar and Zebulun's with him, there's no telling. We notice that right behind the tabernacle, it's interesting, all the tribes that are related to Rachel are together. Both Benjamin's and Joseph's two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. It's called the grouping of Ephraim, which I always thought was kind of interesting because I thought Benjamin was the favorite. But there's all this that's going on there. We really don't understand, and the Bible really doesn't explain. But there's this order, and we see the same order even in Revelation. As God organized the Israelites, there are three tribes on each side, and we have the same order we find in the New Jerusalem in Revelation. In Revelation 21, verses 10 through 13, and God speaking, as he carried me away in the spirit to a great high mountain and showed me the holy city of Jerusalem come down to heaven from God, having the glory of God, its radiance is like a most rare jewel, like jasper, clear as crystal. It had a great wall with 12 gates, and at the 12 gates, 12 angels, and on the gates, the name of the 12 tribes of the sons of Israel were inscribed. On each three gates, on the east three gates, on the north three gates, on the south three gates, and on the west three gates. So here's that same order all the way into Revelation. And as we've talked before, God wasn't looking for the best way. This is the best way. This is the way he has them organized for this. There are 603,000 men. Of course, this doesn't include women and children. And so I think they're all in this line marching. And they're all there as we're going through this wilderness, going to this war. God put us in this community, if we're in there, for a purpose, for his glory. And you know, there are times when you're marching, if you can imagine this, with 603,000 plus people, there's times all you're seeing is the person in front of you, isn't it? You know, you don't see the ark way out in front. You don't see sometimes you're just walking and you're just following the person in front of you. But that's where he put us. You know, for us today, for the battle, why do we need each other? Why did God say we're part of one body? What is it so important for them as well as for us, that God said, I want to put you here together. You need to be joined together. You need to have one another. You know, I know most people know the verse in Hebrews, forsake not the gathering yourselves together. And most people can quote it. Some people can even do more than that. They can say, forsake not the gathering yourselves together, and all the more you see the day approaching. And if you had the same upbringing and the church education that I had, you heard that verse quoted often. And everybody knows what it meant, right? It meant you were supposed to go to church. That's what it meant. But, you know, often the context has been left out of this verse. And I want to take just a few minutes and go out and look at the context of that verse. Flip over to Hebrews chapter 10. And let's look at the context as in Hebrews, the writer of Hebrews is laying out this verse. Because I think it really fits the context we're dealing with today. As we've said, we're going into battle, and the real danger is unbelief. The real danger is the flesh. The real danger is falling away. And here's the writer of Hebrews writing to them in Hebrews chapter 10, and I'll start reading verse 23. Hebrews 10, 23. He writes, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering. Let us hold fast this confession of our hope without wavering. You see, there's a danger of wavering. There's a danger of us. Yeah, we got this confession, but we're wavering. That was happening to the people of Israel. Here they were, those Hebrew children. They had made this profession of faith. They were going out in Hebrews. But they were looking back and saying, you know, but I really liked that system I had before. I really liked the place I was. I really liked the sacrifices. That's where my family is. That's where the priest is. There's this danger of them trying to go back to it. And then the writer of Hebrews is saying, let's hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering. For he who promises is faithful. And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works. Not neglecting to meet together as in the habit of some, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day drawing near. For if we go on sinning deliberately after receiving the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins, but a fearful expectation of judgment and a fury of fire that will consume the adversaries. The reason that we do not neglect meeting together is that there's danger in the wilderness. It's scary out there. We are all, every one of us here, in danger of wavering. And if you think it's not you, pride goeth before the fall. You know that. Every single one of us. There's not one single person here that can honestly say, well, it's not gonna be me. I will never waver. I will never doubt. Nope. I will never have any problems. It is only by God's grace that we keep going and keep walking. It is only by God's grace. But one of the graces that God has done for us, one of the ways he has influenced in our heart is he brings us into community where we're to help one another and encourage one another. You know, when we have these times before our service, when we have these times of testimonies, we're not just trying to kill time. You know? We're trying to encourage one another. I hear how God is meeting in the midst of needs and saying, you know what, God can meet my need too. Or I hear when people are struggling, so I can say, I need to be praying for that person and encouraging them and lifting them up. We're doing this because if we go on sinning deliberately after receiving the knowledge of truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sin. There's a danger out here. This is dangerous. So we need to help one another. We need to come along beside one another. Galatians chapter 6 says, brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Now he sees. Now this is so interesting. If you see a brother in trouble, you're to restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Now, very next verse, keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Don't get caught up in it, but verse 2, bear one another's burdens so to fulfill the law of Christ. For anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor's. For each will have to bear his own load. Bear one another's burdens. Ultimately, you bear your own load. Ultimately, each one of us will bear our own load. But we are to put together to bear one another, to encourage one another. Be careful. Don't let it drag you down. But you are to bear one another. So as we're going into this, here he is. God said, all right, children of Israel, 603,000 men, plus the Levites, plus the children, plus the men. You're going to war. You've been numbered. Now, this is how you organize. This is how you set up. This is how you come together. This is how you watch one another. This is how you set up your camp, facing one another and facing the camp. And at the very heart of this is the tabernacle. This is the direction we're facing. We're to look at each other through the tabernacle or through the cross. And what a difference that makes. So this is what joins us together. This is where the heart, this is our heart. This is what binds us together. And this is what I'm looking for. You see, I'm looking at you as you look for me, because I'm looking, is there any signs of you turning away? Is there any evidence that you're looking somewhere else? Is there any shadow of you turning? I mean, here I am. I'm looking at the cross, and you're looking at the cross, but you're on the other side. And what I'm looking for is there any evidence that you're looking over this way? Oh, wait. No, this is your focus right here. This is where you should be looking. We should be meeting eye to eye all the time. And when I see that signs of you starting to look over here and drift over here and wavering, I'm encouraging you. No, look back here. This is where salvation's found. Because God has organized us, so the very heart is Christ, and we're all looking at Christ. And when your eyes are getting pulled away and you're getting distracted by something else, I see that. When you hear how we're struggling and how we're going through needs, and how that temptation, we're to be encouraged by that. I'm encouraged by how God has blessed others. And when Rick comes in and talks about, and Matt comes and talks about how God has blessed them richly through the reading of the Bible, this encourages me. When Jack and Pat pray, faithfully pray for their families, I'm to be encouraged by that. I'm encouraged when I hear how David struggles in this direction where he's going, but yet in the middle of this, he continues to walk by faith. You know, we don't have it all together. When we gather for a meal, this is a time for fellowship and for building these bonds. And God said to walk through this wilderness, to get through this, you got to be in camp. You got to be in the wilderness. You know, I guess what I mentally picture this side of this is I think these people knew the danger. You know, you didn't see this family saying, "Man, I am so sick and tired of walking through this dust. And every time we march, I'm way back in the end, and it is so dusty. I'm just over it. But I'm just gonna go off here on my own. I'm going to walk on my own. I'm just going to. I know where Israel is. Man, it's just that way. You know? You had to know that had to be tempting. You know, it was literally a 3-week walk from Egypt to Israel. 3 weeks. If you were intentional about your walk, you could make it in 3 weeks. They were in the wilderness 40 years. Do you not think that sometime along this path they're thinking, I know a shortcut, guys. You know, there is a shortcut. We could just go here. We could be there. We could be there next week. But they didn't. They knew the danger. It is dangerous out there in the wilderness. It is dangerous. And I don't know if we recognize that danger. You know, as we've talked about so often before, there's this. We've lost the whole idea of apostasy, the danger of falling away. You know, we don't. That's not part of our paradigm. We don't have that. We're not. It's somebody else who falls away. It's somebody else who goes out away from us. It'll never happen to us, right? Paul says, and all the more as you see the day approaching. You need it all the more as you see the day approaching. For if we go on sinning deliberately, after coming to knowledge of truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sin, but only a dreadful expectation. Oh, that this would be a part of our understanding of what it means to be in the wilderness. Not that we're to live in fear. I don't mean to say that, but that we live with a knowledge and of the feeling of necessary of community. Who's holding you accountable? Who is it that's helping you in your walk, that's coming on beside you and saying, all right, are you walking close to the Lord? You know, who is it in your camp that's helping you in this? If you're trying to do it on your own, that is a very dangerous, dangerous place you are. So as we think about this and what this means, we're going to have the Lord's Supper here in just a minute. I'm going to ask you to do something a little bit different. As I thought about this message in Numbers and the importance of us facing toward the center and facing each other, I want us to do that for the Lord's Supper. I'm going to bring the elements, and I'm going to put them right here in the middle. And I want us to face each other. Because this is what binds us together. It's not, we're not watching a play, are we? We didn't come here to watch a show. We come here to be, all of us to be encouraged together. You know, there was a church a few years ago, almost 30 years ago, they were building a new sanctuary. And they got the idea that they would actually build the sanctuary that would represent their beliefs. You know, more of a picture of their beliefs. So they kind of took their beliefs, and they found an architect to help draw it, and he drew this plans of a sanctuary. And none of them knew what it was going to look like until the architect came and presented it. And it was really interesting the way he presented it. He presented it, and at the center of the building was the communion table and the baptismal pool. And then all around it, you know, you had on this corner, this side, you had the congregation. And over here you had the choir loft. And over here you had the sermon, the pulpit. But they were all around that center. Because he says, I understand what you believe. This is the heart of who you are. This is what binds us all together. It's not a stage, it's not a performance. You know, the way I worship God this Sunday morning is to proclaim what God has revealed to me. The way you worship God this Sunday morning is to hear what God has revealed to me. But we're all doing the same thing. We're all here to worship. There's no difference in that. And I always thought that was, what an interesting picture, you know, that as the architect took it and drew it out. So this morning, as we go through this Lord's Supper, And I'm not as organized as God is, as you can imagine. I don't have like a chart and everybody's in the right place and the right name. You know, that's I wish I was, but unfortunately, but I do want us to when we get ready to take the elements, move your chairs, pick them up, slide them around, but be facing somebody else. And as you're taking the elements, remember, yes, you're taking it as a proclamation, but you're looking at the other person to encourage them as they too take the same elements. So let's pray, and then as we, I think the easiest way to do this is we'll pray and then stand up, and I'm going to bring the elements to the middle, and then kind of pull your chairs around, and so we're all facing one direction. Dear God, as we organize for the battle, as we are a part of this, Lord, I just thank you that you have led us to this point, that you have brought us together, that you are, as we walk in through this wilderness, Lord, this is the way that you set us apart. Lord, we're watching each other's back. We are supporting one another. It's amazing that in and of ourselves, that most of the world goes behind us unnoticed. But as we are facing each other, everything is being seen. That there's no way the enemy sneaks up on us. There's no way that they can come. Or that we have this great privilege of being set apart and then set with you at the heart, you at the center, as we watch, keep our eyes focused upon you. We see one another through the lens of the cross to your glory. Amen. So, as I bring the elements back, just take just a second, and I realize it's going to be a little bit difficult to pull your chairs around, and I want everybody to be facing the center, kind of right beside Carl.